BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Lauren Laverne, and this is the Desert Island Discs podcast. Every week, I ask my guests to choose the 8 tracks, book, and luxury they'd want to take with them if they were cast away to a desert island. And, for rights reasons, the music is shorter than the original broadcast. I hope you enjoy listening. My castaway this week is the radiologist and humanitarian, Dr. Waheed Aryan. He's a pioneer in telemedicine, where volunteer medics around the world use everyday mobile phone technology to advise doctors working on the ground thousands of miles away. It's saved many lives in war zones and remote communities in countries including Syria, Uganda and Afghanistan, where Waheed was born. He founded the charity Aryan Teleheal in 2015 and won a UN Global Hero Award 2 years later. All of which is remarkable, though given his backstory, it's nothing short of miraculous. When he was just 5, his family was forced to flee their home in Kabul during the Soviet-Afghan conflict, narrowly escaping the bombing raids that followed them to Pakistan. Arriving as refugees, they were struck by malaria and malnutrition, and he almost died of tuberculosis. The doctor who saved his life was impressed by his curiosity, and giving him a stethoscope and a textbook also planted a dream. 6-year-old Waheed decided that he too would become a doctor. The ambition took him from a refugee camp in Peshawar to Cambridge University and beyond. He says, "In the UK, the opportunities to achieve my potential and to give back to my family, my adopted country and my homeland were within my grasp, and I was determined to seize them with both hands." Dr. Waheed Aryan, welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a privilege to be here today.
Let's start with your dream. Actually, you had 2 dreams growing up, didn't you? To become a doctor, but also to live a normal, peaceful family life. And you've happily achieved them both. You live in Chester with your wife, Davina, and your 2 young children. I'm imagining that you never take that normality for granted.
Oh, I never take that normality for granted. In a way, I am reliving my childhood, the lost childhood, through my children now. Mm. I'm managing to go home, sit there, watch my children play a play that I never had the opportunity. So those are the small things that I don't take for granted.
You once said, "The straight road doesn't work for me." Why not?
I think it's my experience going through conflict, through displacement, that making any decision could be life and death. And sitting around with parents to decide what we have to do the next day at the age of 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. Even at the age of 5, my father said one thing to me, that if anything had happened to him, that I would be looking after the family. That's age 5. And from then onwards, I lost my childhood in a way, that I became an adult and I had to think on my feet.
Well, Waheed, we've got a lot to talk about. We've also got your discs to share. Tell me about your first.
Well, the first disc I'd like to share is Lose Yourself by Eminem. I got introduced to Eminem when I arrived in the UK. I had no clue about music, Western music, and I didn't know Eminem. So I was studying at A-levels at Maydeville College in London. And I used to see these teenagers walking with their earphones on, and they were doing all these dancing and rapping and all that. I was like, what on earth is that? When I listened to the track, and it really resonated with me. You only get one shot, don't mess your chance. And I thought that was something for me. He knows that, but he's broke. He's so stagnant, he knows when he goes back to this mobile home, that's when it's back to the lab again, yo. This old rhapsody better go capture this moment and hope it don't do better. Lose yourself in the music, the moment you own it, you better never let it go. You only get one shot, do not miss your chance to blow. This opportunity comes once in a lifetime, you better lose yourself in the music, the moment you own it, you better never let it go. You only get one shot, do not miss your chance to blow. This opportunity comes once in a lifetime, you better. Eminem and Lose Yourself.
So, Wahid Aryan, you were born in Kabul in 1983. It was the height of the Soviet-Afghan war. And you were one of 11 surviving children to your parents, Taj Mohammed and Bibi Amina. What do you remember when you think back to that time?
Being taken by my mother to a local park to have an ice cream.
So, a good memory.
It was a good memory. And in that park, there was a slide. It was a concrete Soviet-built slide. Mm. But it was absolutely amazing for me to be able to let loose with my cousins. We wouldn't get that opportunity very often. A lot of the time, we had to hide in cellars or inside the house because it was my father was in hiding.
So your father, we should say, you know, was in hiding because all men were conscripted at that point, expected to fight. And he was a conscientious objector. I want to ask about him in a moment, but I do want to know a little bit more about your mum. You've described her as a superwoman. Why?
She is. And I still remember our hearts beating against each other in cellars when the rockets would come and rain on us. Late at night, she would be tying her head tight because she would be having such a bad headache. And I knew that she hadn't slept for days, but she couldn't afford to sleep. Because she wanted to know how the children are doing, if anyone has a temperature, if they are fed well, and then be alert to what's going on from the outside as well. Do we have to pack again? Do we have to move?
So, Wahid, you've said that your mum was the pragmatist, your dad was the idealist. Tell me a little bit more about him. He had quite a successful job, you know, before the conflict really took over Kabul. He had he was selling currency at Afghanistan's largest money exchange market, I think.
Growing up, he didn't go to school, so he lost his mum aged 4. So he had a very tough childhood himself, but he also had this side to him. That this side that he was teaching us how to be resilient. Late at night, he would be telling me these stories of how Muhammad Ali was fighting Joe Frazier and he would be going round after round, but he would always get up and he wouldn't lose. And for me, that would give me a buzz. Now I'm reflecting on it now that, wow, he was actually telling us that in life you can't give up.
Wahid, it's time to go to the music. Your second choice today, what is it and why are you taking it with you to the desert island?
The second choice is a song by one of the most famous Afghan singers, Farhad Darya. It's called Gul-e Suri. Khoda Hafiz Gul-e Suri, which means goodbye, my flower. It was recorded in 2000, but it reflects the time we went through in the 90s, mainly during the civil war, the losses, the traumas, saying goodbyes to each other. And when I came to the UK, I used to listen to this song and reflect on what had happened.
کبوترهای سبز جنگل در دور دست از من سرود سبز میخواهند کبوترهای سبز جنگل در دور دست از من
Gul-e Suri by Farhad Darya. Wahid Aryan, your parents eventually made the decision to get the whole family out of Afghanistan and head for Pakistan. You were barely 5 at that point. The border was closed, so you were forced to make a very dangerous journey across the mountains. What do you remember about that crossing?
You had to do it at night time, and we had to do it on donkeys and horses. But it was the same route that was used by the Mujahideen, the rebels, to bring in weapons to fight. So anybody that was spotted along this path, the Soviet helicopter, gunship and the jets would attack them, destroy them. One morning we arrived and it was a bit too light and we were visible. My father went with a few men to locate a house for us to sleep. So I came with my father. We were traveling about 7 minutes or 8 minutes. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, my father just grabbed me and he ran towards the village. We had been spotted by a spy plane that my father knew what was coming next. So he was running and he was trying to open one door, knock on another door until he found one house that was empty. he found an oven on the floor, which is used for baking in Afghanistan.
So this is a very large oven. It's sort of in the center of the house, right? So it warms the house as well.
It does. It does indeed. So it's in one central place on the ground, level on the ground. Mm. He took me with him.
So you're hiding inside this oven?
We're hiding inside the oven. He towered me completely, covered me, and the bombing started. Bullets flying, rockets hitting the wall. There was screaming between me and my dad. And after it finished, we went back to the area where my siblings were and my mother were, because we didn't know whether they would be alive. Excuse me.
Sorry, take your time.
But they were alive, and I think this is something that people in conflict zones, that's how they lose loved ones.
Waheed, it took about a week before you all arrived at the Babu refugee camp. What were the conditions that you found there?
We were given one tent and we had to find a way to live in that. A few mattresses or something for us just to put on the floor. But we didn't even have access to clean water. I think when people think of refugee camps or when they say they're in safe places, yes, they're safe from bombs, but physically, mentally and socially, they're not safe.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are absolutely ripe conditions for diseases like malaria and everything else.
And then you contracted TB while you were at the camp. So your father managed to somehow get you to see a specialist in Peshawar and you would go for treatment with him once a month. So this is the man that I referred to in my introduction. So he managed to save your life against the odds, really. I think he gave you a 30% chance of survival at the beginning. He saved your life, but he also changed it. Tell me about the gift that he gave you, that textbook and that stethoscope.
I remember the room because he had aircon that we never had. The feeling of it, the white coat he had, the pens he had. I still remember them vividly.
You're lighting up.
Absolutely. And then the white background that he used for seeing x-rays as well. And I would ask him, can you put an x-ray there? And he would put my x-ray. I said, do you have another one? He would put another one. And I said, what do you see there? And he would quiz me there. And I would answer his questions. But for me, he was this healing figure.
Mm.
And I wanted to be like him.
It's time for your next disc, Waheed. What are we going to hear?
Eye of the Tiger. It's the soundtrack to Rocky movie. Whenever we used to go and visit this doctor in Khyber Pasa, my treat would be that my father would take me to cinema. And usually I was into action movies. Even the lyrics, the rising up, back on the streets, went the distance, now back on my feet, just a man and his will to survive. That is something that kept me going.
Survivor and Eye of the Tiger. So, Waheed Aryan, you spent 3 years in the refugee camp. You recovered from TB and you kept the medical textbook by your side all that time. So talk me through the learning process. How did you learn the English that you needed to start to study it properly?
The textbook was a precious gift, but also a toy for me. I had to flip through the pictures day in and out. Another way for me to be entertained was my father would buy these syringes from pharmacy, and he would ask me that if I wanted to play doctor and patient with him.
So he knew that you wanted to be a doctor by this point, I'm assuming.
Because I was so curious about medicine, and he would allow me to inject boiled water into his arm.
Your poor dad.
My poor dad, and, you know, I'm a doctor and I would not allow my child to take that syringe anywhere close to me. But his arm would turn blue and black because, of course, I didn't know what on earth I was doing. But then after about 1.5 years of treatment, when I became better, I was enrolled in a local school. But it was two muddy rooms next to each other. We had to sit on the floor. So that was the first time I got a taste of the proper education.
Wahid, in 1991, you were able to return to Kabul, but following the rise of the Taliban in the mid-90s, your parents decided it was no longer safe for you to stay there. So they decided to send you to another refugee camp in Pakistan. Now, this camp had set up their own university, and I think it was there that you enrolled to study medicine. You were just 12. How did you hold your own with your fellow students? They must have been much older.
I would try to make my voice really hoarse, and I would pretend outside that I'm a grown-up. That was another important point, that as a child, navigating the camp, I used to think, I used to talk like an adult.
To behave, I mean, this
to behave exactly. Like an adult as well, to survive. But that's how childhood, not for myself alone, for so many children, is lost.
Wahid, we've got to take some time for the music. It's number 4 today. What are we going to hear next and why have you chosen it?
Never Enough by Lauren Alred from The Greatest Showman. This is a song that resonated with me in year 2017. I got to a point that I had a loving family and in a way, if you can call it achievement, that I had done enough to prove to myself that I was worthy of a life, that I could just relax, work in the NHS, see my child grow and have a happy life. But it wasn't enough for me. And I reflected back on a journey when I was in a refugee camp and I saw this young girl in 2015. When I looked into her eyes, my own childhood reflected back to me. And that's the moment I realized that I could actually reach out to so many children across the globe. And that became my purpose.
All the shine of a thousand spotlights, all the stars we steal from the night sky will never be enough, never be enough. Towers of gold are still too little. These hands could hold the world, but it'll never be enough, never be enough for me.
Never Enough, Lauren Alred from The Greatest Showman. So, Wahid Aryan, during the next few years, the healthcare system in Afghanistan had collapsed as more and more people left the country. And you started to feel that your only option was to leave, to go to the West and build a career and support your family there. So you were hooked up with someone who described themselves as a travel agent. He said, oh, yes, I can help you get refugee status and you'll be welcomed in the UK. That was what you were told.
He told me that, yes, we would get you a refugee visa, but it will cost you $10,000 and you have to provide all that amount up front. I was tagged with another two Afghan refugees as well. Two of us were similar age, another one was older. When we talk about routes of leaving conflict zones, you know, legal versus illegal, the reality is very different. There are no embassies in conflict zones. You don't have an online system. So my parents had to make that decision, aged 15, in 1999, and they made that decision, and they agreed finally that they would let go of me. And I had a good reason as well, that my life was coming to risk. I was coming to an age when I was becoming available to serve the Taliban as one of the soldiers, and I knew that time wouldn't be too distant. Mm-hmm. When they will ask people of certain age.
Your parents must have known that as well. They must have been worried.
They did. They were worried, but we couldn't find a solution. So those formal routes were not available.
But when the plane landed at Heathrow, it became immediately clear that actually the story you'd been told was not going to be how it played out. There were police cars waiting for you on the tarmac. Why were they there?
The instructions were that as soon as you land in Heathrow, you would get rid of your passports and then you would tell the police that you were Afghan refugees and they would take you in. But what the eldest didn't follow the instruction on the plane. He did something very stupid. He went to the toilet to burn his passport. And then the other one went. He burnt his passport on the plane as well. So I had to go to the toilet, follow the majority. At that point, there was enough smoke from the other two that the alarm went off. And my heart absolutely sank. I didn't know what I was doing. I thought, oh my goodness, so I have blown everything now.
So that explains the police cars waiting for you on the tarmac. They didn't send you home straight away. They actually sent you to Felton Prison for young offenders. You ended up staying there for 2 weeks. I mean, what was going through your head?
I had heard that if my feet touched British soil, I wouldn't be sent back. So I was relieved. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm not going back on this plane now. I've touched the British soil. Hey! But then they put me in a van. I said, oh, that's okay. I'm in a van. And then they took me to a police station. And the bad news was given to me by one of the solicitors. And he told me that most likely that they will keep you in prison for a year and a half. And after that, you'll be deported because you've committed a crime. And that was extremely dark time for me because I knew that there was no way for me to get in touch with my mother to tell her that I'm safe. I couldn't tell her that your son has landed, but he is actually not safe.
We'll find out where life took you after this next disc, Wahid. It's your fifth choice today. What is it?
Home by Michael Bublé. This was a song that I was listening to when I was at Cambridge University. I saw that other students had family members who would visit. I didn't have anybody. So I would lock myself in that room most of the time. I realized that I was actually a very damaged child. I had to grieve for that childhood. And I think this is the song that helped me grieve.
Another summer day has come and gone away. In Paris and Rome, but I want to go home. Maybe surrounded by a million people, I still feel all alone. Just wanna go home. Oh, I miss you, you know.
Home by Michael Bublé. Wahid Aryan, you were released from Feltham on bail and eventually the charges against you were dropped. What do you remember about your first night of freedom in the UK?
It was magical for me to be out on the streets for the first time, to see clean buildings, to look into the sky. The rain was dropping. I couldn't sleep the entire night. But I was in a hurry and I knew that these opportunities could be taken away from me any moment. I could be sent back.
You definitely were in a hurry, Wahid. During the next few years, you worked in a gift shop and a greengrocer's, among other jobs. You also studied for your A-levels in your spare time. Then, as you say, you got into Cambridge where you studied medicine. How did you adjust to student life there?
First of all, I couldn't believe that I was there because I didn't know so much about the reputation first to start with. And then when I started searching about it and somebody told me who I'd met through one of the British Gas jobs that I was doing, and he said, oh, have you heard about Cambridge University? I said, yes, but it's not for me. And he said, well, you've got the A's, you should apply. So I went to one of my tutors at one of the colleges and he immediately put me off. He said, you're not white, you're a refugee, we don't even know your school background, so don't waste one of your places, don't apply. I was furious with that and I came out, I was crying, but then I was stomping up and down on King's Cross. But I was determined. I said, if Russian bombs didn't kill me, Cambridge is not going to kill me. So I went the opposite way. I really became determined.
We're going to take a moment for some music now, Wahid. What's your next choice?
It's Fly by Celine Dion, because later on when I came back to London to complete my clinical studies at Imperial College, I was getting closer to my goal to become a doctor, but I was losing touch with my identity. I didn't know whether I was British, I was Afghan. And I was doing so much for the family that I came to a point that I ran out of adrenaline. And that was my breakdown point. And at that point, it was Dr. Schachter, who was my tutor at Imperial College. And for the first time in my life, I opened up. I said, I just can't do this anymore. And I was so broken deep down that I couldn't keep running anymore. And he gave me a hug and he said, Wahid, listen, you've got a long life in front of you. So you really have to look after yourself. So that's the first time when I started to be kind to myself. And to let go.
Fly, fly, do not fear. Don't waste the breath.
by Celine Dion. Wahid Aryan, you graduated from Cambridge in 2006 and you started training as a radiologist. Several years later, you set up your charity, Aryan Telehealth. But as we've heard, your mental health was suffering. What were you dealing with?
I was becoming quite overreactive, and Davina, my wife, noticed it. I was on the edge. My friends, they were checking on me as well, but I knew I had to seek help. And that's the first time I'm disclosing that I had to go to a clinical psychologist and tell them. Later on, working on the front line in the NHS as an A&E doctor and radiologist, I found more healing because I knew that my skills were being used. I could see that I could give to patients the smile on their face. Even now, despite being very busy in A&E, I pull out a chair, I sit down with my patient, and I have a good chat for 5 minutes. I hold their hands and ask them how they're feeling, how the family members, because I can see the worry on their faces as well. But that's the magical moment for me that reminds me of why I picked up a stethoscope.
Wahid, the idea behind Teleheal is that volunteer medics in the West can be on the line advising doctors in war zones and in countries with poor resources using smartphones. One of the charity's first patients outside Afghanistan was a 2-year-old girl in Syria. How were you able to help her?
She was diabetic, this young girl who was comatosed, and I knew immediately that this is an emergency case. So they didn't know what to do next. I connected them to one of our pediatric specialists, and he responded within minutes. He knew it was an emergency as well. He gave step-by-step instructions of how to manage that emergency, what fluids to give, what medication to give. And the next morning, I saw a picture and a video of that girl walking. That was something very special for me. Immediate motivation, a proof of concept that this thing is working. You know, thousands of miles away, a life has been saved.
It's time for your seventh choice, Wahid. What are we going to hear next?
This is a song by Sir Elton John, Are You Ready for Love? A song when finally after my breakdown in 2009 and getting out of that and trying to learn to be kind to myself, I was ready to find somebody. I was ready to find a life partner who I could confide in, who could help me talk about my life. And I found my wife, and that is the song I'm dedicating to Davina.
I'll write a symphony just for you and me. If you let me love you, I'll paint a masterpiece just for you to see. If you let me love you, let me love you. Are you ready? Are you ready for love? Yes, I am. Are you? Are you ready? Are you ready for love?
Elton John and Are You Ready for Love for your wife, Davina. Dr. Wahid Aryan. So, Wahid, the politics of the current refugee crisis do divide opinion. What would you say to people who are concerned about the numbers of people trying to come to the West?
I would simply ask people to think of people who are fleeing conflict, persecution, or for other reasons as human beings. Mm-hmm. Of course, we have to protect borders. We have to also make sure that criminal gangs are not operational as well. But blaming refugees, blaming people who've fled conflict, and trying to politicize them or weaponize them, I think that's inhumane.
I wonder about your feelings and your experience. You know, you've spent a lot of time reflecting on life growing up, on home, and also talking about Afghanistan now. When you think about the country, what do you miss about it and what do you hope for its future?
Afghanistan has sadly been forgotten now. It's extremely heartbreaking for me to see the people suffer. We can do better as humanity, that if we can only manage to reach out to those people. And I miss it daily.
What do you miss? I would love
to go back and sit with my relatives on a carpet, to be able to eat with them together, to be able to smile with them together, to have tea, chai. I want to explore. I want to just go and sit near a river and let the water just touch my feet. But now they need help. And for the world to come together, put the politics to one side and to reach out to the people.
Waheed, it's almost time. I'm going to cast you away. You've shown yourself, of course, to be incredibly resourceful, resilient, strong, someone who can build a new life from scratch. Do you have any concerns about being on the desert island? How do you picture it in your mind's eye when you think about it?
I was thinking about this. I thought I was a castaway all my life, actually. And so for me, you know what? I might go and relax for once, actually. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to you having finally a moment to put your feet up. I'm excited for you. One more disc before we send you away, though, Waheed. What's it going to be?
It's Everything I Wanted by Billie Eilish. It's a song that makes me think what's happened. It's my own life is repeating itself in front of me. But although I'm better equipped now, I have loved one around me, I have friends, and I have the compassion. And I am getting mental health support myself. But for me, still, it is a bad dream that I'm waking up from.
And you say, as long as I'm here, no one can hurt you. Don't wanna lie here, but you can learn to. If I could change the way that you see yourself.
Billie Eilish and Everything I Wanted. So, Waheed Aryan, I'm going to send you away to your desert island. I'm giving you the Quran, the complete works of Shakespeare, and you can take one other book. What's that going to be?
The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. It's a book by a 14-year-old who was in Malawi. He couldn't afford to go to school. He had to drop out. Malawi was going through famine and HIV, and they didn't have a severe drought, and they didn't have water for the crop. So he had to figure out a way to help.
It all starts with one remarkable true story. That book is yours. You can also have a luxury item, Waheed. What are you going to go for? Please tell me you're going to treat yourself. You're supposed to be getting better at this self-care business.
I will be taking a pen and paper, actually.
Ah.
When I was a castaway and during conflict, that I would go into outside the house on my own. I would find a pen and paper and I would draw. I'm not good at drawing, but I would draw an imaginary house, an imaginary school, imaginary friends. And that would give me a moment of solace, whether it was for a few hours. That was finding hope.
I'll give you them gladly. And finally, which one track of the eight that you've shared with us today would you save from the waves, Waheed?
It would be Fly by Celine Dion to comfort the lost myself for the lost childhood, but also to reflect on the good things and what I'm capable of.
Dr. Waheed Aryan, thank you very much for sharing your Desert Island Discs with us.
Thank you so much, Lauren, for having me.
Hello. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Waheed, and I'm sure he'll put that pen and paper to good use on the island. We've cast away many medics in the past, including David Knott, Professor Dame Elizabeth Naker Anionwu, and Professor Avril Mansfield. You can find these episodes in our Desert Island Discs programme archive and through BBC Sounds. The studio manager for today's programme was Michael Millam, the assistant producer was Christine Pavlovsky, and the producer was Paula McGinley. Next time, my guest will be the rugby player, Kevin Sinfield. I do hope you'll join us.
Hello, this is Marion Keyes.
And this is Tara Flynn.
And we're here to remind you that our podcast, Now You're Asking, is back for a new series.
Each week we take real listeners' questions about life,
love,
lingerie,
cats,
dogs,
dentists, anything really.
And apply our worldly wisdom in a way which we hope will help.
But also hopefully entertain.
Join us, why don't you?
Search up Now You're Asking
on BBC Radio 4, now available on BBC Sounds.